Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. My name is Mark Caldwell. Coming up, after having just captured Goma and other towns in the eastern DRC, M23 rebels are starting to pull out. We ask why.
Maybe their offensive that they did in capturing Goma and other big cities was just a way of flexing the muscle, showing the Congolese government how strong they are.
And as Ghana prepares to go to the polls, some fear there is a lingering threat of electoral violence.
I think that we would have, you know, largely a peaceful, you know, electoral process. But I also think that those flashpoints are still real. They are real.
Just some of the stories coming up in the next 25 minutes. This program comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Stay with us.
Top story.
Rebels in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo have started withdrawing from towns, including Goma, that they captured from government troops over the past week. But the UN said on Wednesday it had seen no major movement of the rebels in Goma. The pullout follows a deal brokered by Uganda. The military commander of M23, General Sultani Makenga, has threatened to retake Goma if the president of the DRC, Joseph Kabila, fails to meet their demands. James Shimanyula reports.
M23 military commander General Sultani Makenga said on Wednesday that rebels had begun to withdraw from the captured town of Sake and Masisi, 1 week after seizing Goma, the mineral-rich city of more than 1 million people. In a telephone interview from Goma, M23 spokesman Betrana Bisimwa confirmed that the rebels were leaving to pitch camp at Rushuru town in North Kivu region, 70 kilometers north of Goma and less than 20 kilometers from Congo's border with the neighboring Uganda.
Our army is withdrawing from Goma to Rushuru. This is a big program, and I don't know what I can say about the time which this takes. But very important to me, from today, our army is leaving. We think that Kinshasa will respect part of the agreement.
Part of the agreement that Bisimwa is referring to contains a demand to hold national peace talks, for human rights to be respected, political prisoners released, good governance to be introduced, and the disbandment of the current electoral commission, which the rebels claim enabled President Kabila to, as they put it, cheat in the November 2011 presidential election. Meanwhile, international aid agencies are working hard to help thousands of displaced people, as Yels Nelk, spokesman for the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, explains.
Humanitarian organizations were working around the clock to assist some 140,000 IDPs located in 12 sites inside and around the town of Goma. The number of IDPs have increased significantly, which has pushed the center capacities to the limit.
I also spoke by telephone with the United Nations World Food Programme's representative in Goma, John Said Paddon, who reported that clean water is now available there.
After the rebel attack on Goma, water situation was a problem, but now there's water in Goma and nearby areas. So for the time being, it's not really a big issue. But right after the rebel attack, it was a big problem to get water and electricity.
But Adrian Edward, spokesman for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, UNHCR, said diseases had also been reported due to the harsh living conditions.
Some cases of vomiting, diarrhea, and respiratory infections have been recorded. These respiratory infections are due to the fact that people have no shelter, have been sleeping in the open.
During an emergency meeting, the African Union Security Council gave the rebels until Monday next week to pull out from Goma. They also called on the rebels and the government troops to allow humanitarian aid for displaced people.
Council urged that all stakeholders ensure unhindered humanitarian access and guarantee the security and safety of the staff of the humanitarian organizations who are operating under very challenging conditions.
The M23 military commander, General Sultani Makenga, said his forces will leave Goma later, but he added that they are ready to return if President Kabila does not fulfill their demands.
James Shimanyula, the UN Security Council made a new demand on Wednesday for outside governments to end support for the M23 rebels. The demand was made at a meeting at which the DRC and neighbouring Rwanda wrangled over who was backing M23. But what is known about M23's long-term objectives? Are they seeking financial gain? Do they have political ambitions? For insight into these questions, I turn to Peter Hiller from DW's French for Africa service.
We know that most of the rebels that are organized in M23 have been fighting before in different rebellions in East Congo. And some of these rebels, when they reached a peace agreement with the Congolese government, part of the deal was that they would be integrated into the regular Congolese army. And the rebels say that the government didn't keep its word, and that is why they started M23. They took the name from the date of March 23. That was the day when they brokered a peace deal with the Congolese government. So it could be that M23 is mostly made up of soldiers who were not content with what the Congolese army offered them in terms of posts or in terms of salaries or whatever.
How much of a role have ethnic tensions in North Kivu played in fueling this conflict?
I think that ethnic tensions play a big role in this, because much of what is happening in East Congo is actually an after effect of the Rwandan genocide of 1994. And for example, M23 is mostly made up of officers that come from the ethnic Tutsi community. And then there are other groups of rebels that are mostly from the Hutu community that fled Rwanda after the genocide. And there are several reports, one of them coming from the United Nations, that say that the Rwandan government is actually supporting M23 because of this, because they are mostly made up of Tutsi officers fighting Hutu groups in East Congo.
Why do you think they are pulling out of the towns that they captured? How could it be to their advantage strategically?
It's very hard to answer. Maybe international pressure was getting stronger with them taking control of such a busy and big city such as Goma. Maybe their offensive that they did in capturing Goma and other big cities was just a way of flexing the muscle, showing the Congolese government how strong they actually are, in order to try and get more politically involved into what is happening in the Congo, maybe to enter direct talks with the Congolese government, just to show how strong they are. And I am also sure that they won't fully retreat from the region. Maybe they'll get out of Goma, but just retreat a bit up to the north, and they won't lose control of their strategic positions there.
So is a peaceful end to this conflict in sight?
I don't think so. The war in East Congo has been going on for almost 20 years now, and there are dozens of armed groups operating in this region, M23 just being one of them, and they are all fighting for power and for control of resources. And then there are also neighboring states such as Rwanda and Uganda that are also highly involved in the conflict. It's a conflict for mineral resources. There's so much wealth that can be made from controlling this area, and that's why I don't think that the region will find peace anytime soon.
Peter Hiller from DW's French for Africa service.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
In just over a week from now, the people of Ghana go to the polls in a presidential election. As there is fierce and tense competition between the two main parties, the NDC and the NPP, some fear their rivalry could spill over into street violence. But President Mahama has said he was confident that civil society and the church had the ability to take the country through peaceful elections. There were outbursts of violence back in May during voter registration. Meanwhile, all eight presidential candidates have just signed a peace pact, pledging to ensure the electoral process remains peaceful. Our correspondent in Accra, Isaac Kiledzi, has been to one of the more volatile spots in the Ghanaian capital and sends us this report.
Kumasi declaration, taking a stand against electoral violence, impunity and injustice in Ghana.
That's Ghana's Chief Justice, Georgina Theodora Wood, reading out the peace pact that was signed by all the 8 presidential candidates contesting next week's elections to be held on December 7. To find out what the ordinary people think of the pact and what role it could play in ensuring a peaceful election, I traveled to the Ododo-Diodio constituency. Ododo-Diodio constituency is one of several areas identified by the authorities as a potential flashpoint in the upcoming election.
Thank you so much. Okay, which party do you support? Which party?
I came across these 2 young men who reside in this area. They belong to the NPP and the NDC. Good morning to you, gentlemen. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's your name, sir?
My name is Benjamin Kwe.
And what's your name?
Ibrahim Kombi.
Okay, I'm sure many of you know of the elections coming up next week. We're going to have a short conversation about a peaceful election. The 2 of you, what comes to your mind when we talk about peaceful election? What comes to your mind ahead of the election next week?
Like how the foreign countries, they make that election peacefully. Like me, Abraham, like I want to, we Ghanaians follow that foreign election like how we make it here.
So do you think that there will be peaceful election come next week?
Yeah.
Okay, so Ben, so Abraham thinks that there will be peaceful election next week. Ben, do you also think that there will be peaceful election?
Be peaceful election. There will no fight, no trouble. Now, we want Ghana to be like America. Because, see America, they all vote together. But now they make one. We don't have party A flag, party B flag. But all holding American flag. So we are hoping that we need peaceful election. Ghana will not be like other countries they are fighting.
What are the youth doing in this area to ensure there is peace?
Some of the youth like insulting. As for me, I can't sit down and watch you to insult my candidate. From the NDC to, you can't sit down to watch like I was insulting a president or his candidate. We are all to be one.
Those fighting, they are even no inside of politics, you know. If we say politics, politics is like you are a different side and me too, I'm a different side. You are fighting for your own, me too, I'm fighting for my own, you know. But it's not a fight, you know. So if he said you could win, win-win is not a fight.
Political analyst Romeo Adugla believes the peace pact will make the political leaders morally accountable for their actions during the elections.
I think that it was a very, very crucial, you know, event. I mean, everybody understood how important it was because we've reached a certain crossroad where it could make or break the nation. So it was a very essential, you know, event. Even though it was purely a moral, you know, obligation being placed on the people.
Mr. Dugla believes there is indeed a risk of violence.
I think that we would have, you know, largely a peaceful, you know, electoral process. But I also think that those flashpoints are still real. They are real. And just last week, the police actually identified over 1,000 flashpoints across the country. What the police need to do is to ensure that, you know, they have the right mechanisms in place too. Because no matter what you do, people would want to cause trouble.
Ghana is one of the few countries in the region with a good record of power changing hands peacefully, and with almost a week left before Ghanaians go to the poll to pick their next leader, one can only hope that this record is maintained.
Isaac Kaletse in Accra.
Behind the headlines.
There was praise for Malawi from the International Monetary Fund earlier this month. It lauded the reforms introduced by President Joyce Banda, including the devaluation of the currency, the kwacha, against the dollar. The aim was to stimulate the economy and generate much-needed foreign exchange. But critics say, 6 months on, devaluation has just driven up prices and made the poor even poorer. George Mahanga reports from Blantyre.
Before the devaluation of the kwacha 6 months ago, the dollar was trading at $1 to 170 Malawi kwacha. Now, $1 is equal to 328 kwacha in commercial banks, while on the black or pearl markets, it's priced at 350 kwacha. An average Malawian has to get by on less than a dollar a day. That's not even enough to buy a loaf of bread. And access to dollars is time-consuming and difficult because foreign currency is scarce on the market. The devaluation has hit consumers hard, whose salaries have not been adjusted by the same percentage. Those in business hardly make any profit. Mother of five, Maureen Jintengo, is a vegetable vendor in Blantyre City Market. She says her vegetables, sold like hotcakes before the power of the kwacha against major foreign currencies, was reduced by almost half.
My earnings have dwindled by half since the devaluation. Normally, I used to go home with close to 12,000, which is $90 as profit from my business per day. I now make that amount in 4 days to my satisfaction. How do I support my family? I have also resorted to ordering few commodities as I cannot make more profits because most of the cash I make ends up being used to settle charges for hiring transport and rentals.
Mbumba Mita owns a company that produces energy-saving products such as stoves to mitigate climate change. She also complains about the effect of the devaluation. She says at times her company is unable to deliver goods and services because of lack of fuel.
Yes, we're definitely affected. For example, in the construction of rocket barns, we use iron sheets and various other materials which we buy from other contractors. So with the devaluation, it's had a large impact on the cost of the rocket barns, which might make some of the technologies unavailable for most Malawians. But still, I believe that it's a worthy investment.
Linda Piri is the chief executive with Malawi's National Construction Industry Council, NCIC. She says most local companies are feeling the pinch, and it will be the consumers who end up paying the bill.
Devaluation has affected the construction industry just like any other industry. All our players have also been affected that the cost of construction has gone up because of the effects of devaluation. Just like any other industry, our players will also have to hedge. That means they will also pass the costs, the high cost to their clients. That is what will happen, unfortunately.
With electricity and water bills also up in reaction to the devalued power of the kwacha, people are finding it tough to get to the end of the month with the same salary as before. Market surveys show prices of basic items such as maize flour, sugar, soap and salt have gone up by as much as 50%, and fuel prices rise every month, pushing up the cost of public transport as well. Peter Mutharika, the younger brother of the late President Bingu wa Mutharika and leader of the Democratic Progressive Party, says the government has not handled the devaluation well.
What we didn't want is to devalue, and then we end up with months of endless negotiations. I don't know what they were promised in Washington when they decided to do their 49% devaluation. It looks like up to now that it has not yet been done, or if done, it's very little, that it has no impact. That's why Bingu was concerned. He's concerned about the impact, because he had seen this in other countries, and we wanted to avoid that.
But President Joyce Banda says the government has launched an economic recovery plan to deal with the effects of devaluation. And she says she has warned employers that they risk punitive action if they do not increase salaries, as she has done with civil servants whose salaries have gone up by 21%, still far below the 49% devaluation rate.
George Mahanga reporting from Blantyre. This Sunday, two prominent Kenyan politicians, Uhuru Kenyatta and William Ruto, will announce details of their pact to run together in the race for the presidency in March. The two former rivals both face charges at the International Criminal Court in The Hague, where they are expected to go on trial in 6 months' time. Our reporter Alfred Kitty in Nairobi has been watching this story unfold on the social media in Kenya, and I asked him first whether Kenyans believed the two of them could win this election.
Well, Kenyans have varied opinions on these two candidates winning the elections, because the fact that they have not agreed on a coalition formula is putting Kenyans at an awkward position, wondering how they can beat their rival, who is in this case, the Prime Minister, Raila Odinga, because this coalition agreement is supposed to be sealed by 4th of December, and to date, they have not sealed the coalition agreement, and Kenyans are wondering whether these two can win the elections.
Of course, they may not be able to enter the race at all, let alone win it, because there's a legal challenge to their participation on constitutional grounds before the Kenyan courts at the moment. What are Kenyans saying about this?
Kenyans are saying that if Ruto and Uhuru are barred by the courts from contesting the presidency, this leaves a clear victory for ODM leader Raila Odinga in this race. But due to the nature of politics in Kenya, which is basically dictated by tribal alienations, a section of Kenyans feel that when the two are barred from contesting, then they must have an alternative choice. And in this case, they're looking for another candidate who are a bit popular in the country. In this case, maybe the vice president to back him.
Are Kenyans worried about the prospect of having a president and a vice president who are on trial in The Hague? Isn't it all rather embarrassing?
Big section of Kenyans are worried about the two because they say if they have a president and a vice president who are facing charges at the Hague, how are they going to run the country anyway? And this, they feel it's an embarrassment altogether to the international community as well.
Let's leave aside for a moment the difficulties of combining high political office with attendance at criminal proceedings. Do Kenyans think this alliance between Uhuru Kenyatta and William Ruto would actually work?
Many Kenyans think that this alliance wouldn't work because for once, the two are combining forces, but they have to seek support from their supporters or their people. For example, William Ruto is combining forces with the Uhuru, but a section of his community is not backing this idea at all.
So this alliance could still fall apart, could it not?
People are predicting so, that this alliance could fall apart because there were conflicting reports that two had agreed or had struck a deal, but only for Uhuru Kenyatta to refute the claims in the media that we have not yet announced the deal. So they are waiting for Sunday to announce the deal, but this is also a confusion.
How big a role are social media playing generally in campaigning for the March elections?
The social media in Kenya is playing a very, very big role in the campaigns because everybody now is relying on the social media for news and updates, unlike before when people used to listen to radio and TV only to get information. But this time, information is coming very fast, and the social media in Kenya will also influence the outcome of the elections next year.
Alfred Kitty in Nairobi.
Opinion.
And let's stay in Kenya because we'd like to have your views on what's happening there. As we've been hearing, it's possible that the country could end up with a president and a vice president who are both in the dock at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. How worried should Kenyans be by this prospect? Are you perhaps a Kenyan who is planning to vote in the March election? How concerned are you by the recent exploits of Uhuru and Ruto? Or do you think such concerns are groundless? We would like to hear from you, either in an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or in a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany.
Get DW 24 hours a day. Our new round-the-clock English language TV channel is now on air. You'll find it on the KU band satellite SES5. For more details, please go online and check out www.dw.de/reception.
A reminder of our main stories. Rebels in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo have started withdrawing from towns captured from government troops following a deal brokered by Uganda. The eight candidates in Ghana's presidential election have signed a pact pledging to keep next week's poll peaceful. We've also been hearing about the hardship caused by the devaluation of Malawi's currency against the dollar. Africa Link will be back again at the same time tomorrow. Do join us if you can. That email address for you once again, feedback.africa@dw.de. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.